Hello, folks. Welcome to the Ultimate Podcast. I'm Steve Weeks with the League of Untouchable American Gamers here, coming to you from Houston, Texas. Thanks for listening, folks. I'll tell you, I'm still suspended, and I want to thank Kyle. Kyle, was that his name, that started the thread? I didn't ask him to do that, but he started it on his own, and we got all these comments coming in. It seems to be that my last podcast, the majority opinion seems to think it was mean-spirited. You know, I didn't get that at all, but it's amazing how you, when you do these things, how it comes across to the other people. You never know how it's going to come across. And it's funny, I got a word from my internet provider that Aldi had tried to ban me from my own website. But of course, they laughed it off. Of course, he was unsuccessful. You know, these guys, what are you going to do with these computer guys? They just want to take over the world, don't they, with all this power. But sorry, Aldi, you can't ban me from my own website. What are you going to do? People love the Ultimate Podcast, and it's here to stay. And thanks again for Kyle for starting that thread and the interesting discussion that we had on the last podcast. There was a lot of misstated facts and stuff on that thread. First, let's start with the arch enemy list. I don't know who the guy was. Was it Palmero? I think Palmero was his name. He had a cool name though. The guy. He totally wrong on those reasons why the people are on the arch enemy list. You folks have got to follow this podcast. You can't just pick up in the middle because you're going to miss stuff. But let me state the facts here for those of you that may be listening for the first time. Why these people are on the arch enemy list. He called it a hit list. It's not a hit list. It's an arch enemy list of the Ultimate Podcast. All right. Aldi is on the list for one simple reason, and one reason only. It's not because I disagree with the game. Aldi plays the same games that I do, Michael Barnes does, and he loves them. But that's not the reason he's on the list for being a so-called Euro snoot. He's on the list for a very simple reason, for banning Michael Barnes. And yes, the guy Aldi is bad for gaming in that respect, that he has silenced a voice that we want to hear from. I know he's got Fortress Ameritrash over there, but really Barnes was at his best on Board Game Geek, responding to comments from people, and Aldi has silenced that voice, and that's why Aldi is on the arch enemy list. Dirk is on the list. He barely made the list. He's on the bottom. He was a honorary member of the league, but since he made the list, he lost that. He's on the list for his comment on the banning of Michael Barnes in that thread. He said that he agreed that Aldi's way he handled this, he thought a benevolent dictatorship was the best form of government. Even if he said that as a joke, I can't stand for that. And that's what put Dirk on the arch enemy list. Very simple. Alan Moon is on the list for a very simple reason. The gathering of friends, the exclusivity of the event, the exclusive event that keeps the elitist attitude of the event. We here at the League of Untouchable American Gamers feel that gaming should be open to the public. It's for the people. This exclusive stuff is a bunch of crap, and that's why Alan Moon is on the list. Greg and Greg Schlosser and Tom Vassell are on the list for very simple reasons also. For the free games issue, they're both so-called, quote, reviewers, but they do reviews in a non-committal way. And I want to thank Michael Panizzi for that word, non-committal. That is the perfect way to describe these guys, a non-committal attitude in their reviews and the free games they get, which I feel, and a lot of other people feel the same way, that these reviews, free games, influence their reviews. They don't give a very definite answer on what they really feel about the game. They won't give a negative review. That's why those guys are on the list. So that's why they're on the list. So let's not. It has nothing to do with whether they're so-called Euro snoots or not. Although Schlosser is the biggest Euro snoot of them all with the games he likes, But that's really not the reason he's on the list. The reason he's on the list is because of the reason I stated, the noncommittal attitude with the reviews. And speaking of Michael Meneze, who had a comment on the thread, he gave a very good critique of my podcast, and I appreciate that. I agree with about half of what he said, the top half. But thank you, Michael, for that critique. And those of you that are critiquing the podcast, you're wasting your time, really, because I'm going to do what I want, okay? This thing is free. I'm not making a dime off this. I do this for free. I do this for the entertainment. It's a great feeling that you can do something and nobody has any say but myself. And those of you that do podcasts, I'm sure feel the same way. And those of you that thought I criticized Garrett's podcast, you're wrong. I criticize the opinions of the people in the podcast. If you listen closely, I didn't have very much critique on Garrett himself. He does a fine show. I liked his show. He has a very good broadcast voice. The only critique I had on Garrett was that he didn't challenge his guests. And let's get that straight. You people you're taking a lot of things out of context, and you're not following exactly what I'm saying on here, so you need to pay attention when you're listening to me. I'm going to do what I want. And people that do podcasts, you should do what you want, because one thing in entertainment, in the entertainment field, you got to understand that you cannot... the biggest lesson to learn is you cannot please everybody. People have such a different taste and such things. Just do what you want to do. Attract the people that like the podcast. If you people don't like it, don't download it. I mean, you have to go through quite a bit to download this thing. Just don't do it. I'm going to do the type of thing I do. And if you like it, fine. If you don't like it, fine. But I'm going to do what I want to do. Okay? Now, one of the biggest critiques I got was from this guy, character Drew. I've never mentioned him before on the podcast. I considered him kind of a flea, just on the dog of gaming, as I said before. But he's made such a voice against my podcast. I figured I want to try to set things straight with Drew. I want to make a call to Drew now. I found his number. I want to call Drew, see if we can settle things, because he's been the most outspoken critic of the Ultimate Podcast of everybody out there. I want to call Drew and see if we can straighten things out. Let's see if we can get Drew on the line. Okay? Let me see here. Drew. Hello, Drew. Are you there? Come on, Drew. I mean, come on. It's not that bad. Come on. What is it? Drew, come on. Come on now. Don't be upset. Drew, come on. Come on, Drew. Here you go, Drew. Here's your Euro game, Drew. Here's your little copy of Kalis, Drew. Yes, it is. Here's your copy of Kalis, Drew. Yes, it is, little Drew. Good, Drew. Good, Drew. Yes. Okay. Woo, Drew was upset there. You know, I think the main reason that Drew was really upset, and a lot of people that were upset on the Ultimate Podcast, is that really I am becoming the king of gaming. Really, the king of gaming. The top personality in the world in the gaming community, Steve Weeks, the king of gaming. You know, I wonder, really, you know, what it would be like to be the king of gaming.
If I were the king of gaming,
not queen, not duke, not prince,
my royal dice of gaming
would be gold, not plastic, not chintz.
I'd command each gamer be trasher or snoot with a woof and a woof and a kick from my boot. As I click my heel, all the Euro snoots kneel and the webmasters bow and the trashers kowtow.
And Greg Slosser would take wing.
If I
were king,
Each gamer would show respect to me. The Eurosnoots would reflect with me. Though my tongue would lash, I would show compassion for every underling. If I were king.
Bubbles loves Kiss. Ooh. Oh, there was, what was the other point I wanted to bring up from that thread on my last podcast? Oh, yeah. Mr. Skeletor had a great point, and I want to emphasize this to you. He said that Mr. Weeks has nothing to do with Fortress Ameritrash, and that is true. I am not affiliated with Fortress Ameritrash. I have my own organization, the League of Untouchable American Gamers, and then you have Fortress Ameritrash over there. I have a link to Fortress Ameritrash on my website, on the League of Untouchable American Gamers website to Fortress Ameritrash, but I am not affiliated with those guys. Those guys do their own thing. I do my own thing. Where I do agree with about, I'd say, 90% of this stuff, but that they talk about over there, but I'm not affiliated with them at all. I want to make that clear, and they probably want to make that clear too, that they're not affiliated with me. And I am okay with that, especially if you see Mr. Skeletor's last post, the Iwo Jima picture there. Okay, I am very glad. I am very comfortable over here in my own league, And I will stay that way. Thank you very much. So I just wanted to let you folks know that we're two separate organizations fighting for the same cause of promoting the American style games that we love to play. Just want to make that clear to you folks. Now let's go on to our guest. We got a great guest tonight. I'm talking with Jason Little. You're in St. Louis, right?
That is correct. Home of the St. Louis Cardinals.
All right, great. I guess your claim to fame, do you go by Jay or Jason?
It kind of depends. I guess I only go by Jason when I'm in trouble.
I guess your claim to fame is you're the designer of Sports Clicks. Is that correct?
Yes, I am, along with Meg Novahill of WizKids fame. I don't know if I'd say claim to fame, maybe notoriety.
Tell us a little bit how you got involved with that.
Well, I used to work for the Sporting News, which is the longest-running weekly sports publication in the United States. It's kind of a rival of Sports Illustrated.
Right.
And while I was with the Sporting News, I had the opportunity to work on baseball's Strat-O-Matic. Strat-O-Matic had approached Sporting News and was interested in creating an online interface, allowing sports fans to basically play Strat-O-Matic online.
Right.
So being a huge sports fan and the people at Sporting News knowing that I was really involved and heavy into gaming, they asked if I wanted to be involved and in charge of the code development on the front end since I had been a web developer.
Right. Okay.
So I got my hands dirty and got to work for about a year on this Strat-O-Matic design. And then I saw at the end of that project that WizKids had just posted on the website that they were looking for somebody who knew sports and was interested in game design to help them design a baseball game.
Uh-huh.
So I submitted my resume like anybody else would, and within 2 days I got a call back, set up a few phone interviews. Next thing I know, they're like, okay, when can you start working on it?
Oh, that's great.
That was pretty exciting.
Yeah. Now tell me, have you played a lot of those? What's, in your opinion, the best collectible miniatures game? If you take sport, you know, obviously take Sports Clicks out of it, since that's your own. But I mean, if you had to pick one,
you know, that's really difficult to do because there are some out there that I know people are really hot for that I just haven't had a chance to play. I own Dreamblade. I own a lot of Dreamblade figs. Haven't had a chance to play it, but I think that it would be up my alley. But of all the games that I've played, I think the one that is most overlooked would be WizKids' version of Crimson Skies.
Ah, yes.
The old FASA game.
Right. I got that as well. I was a little disappointed in the pace of the game. Some of the conditions where, you know, where they jump out of the plane and so forth, it just boiled down to a dice roll.
Some of it did get a little silly, but I'll tell you what. I used to play the old version, which was a nightmare. I mean, it was worse than Battletech to try to slog through all the charts.
Uh-huh.
But I thought for the quality of the figures and the gameplay, and you knew what you got when you bought a...
Absolutely. The figures were fantastic. I love the figures. I was just a little disappointed in the game. You know, I really loved it at first, but then after a while, you know, it's something not there with it, you know, at least for me.
I think one of the problems was it disappeared so soon that they never got that second round to introduce more figures and more rules.
Right.
You know, they got to do that with HeroClix. They got to do that with Mage Knight. I guess the other one that I really enjoyed was Mage Knight Dungeons, the special kind of dungeon quest version of Mage Knight.
Right.
Really loved that.
Right. Now, speaking of dungeons, you were telling me in your email your other claim to fame was that you actually designed role-playing modules for Dungeons & Dragons. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I actually do a lot of writing for Dungeons & Dragons. In fact, that's probably my biggest freelance adventure right now. I still try to do some board game design here and there, but while there's still a market for it, I've been writing as much Dungeons and Dragons material as I can.
Let's talk about that. Compare the markets between board gaming and role-playing. I've been out role-playing for years, basically the same reason as a lot of people. You get married, you have kids, you got a job. You just don't have the time to spend that role-playing, you know, requires.
Do you think the difference between a lot of people who used to be role-players that converted into board gamers?
Right.
Board gaming, you can pick up and go. If you were expecting six and you only got five people to show up, you can still play. You just grab a different game off the shelf.
Right, right.
If you're the dungeon master and you had spent a week preparing for a game and at the last minute Joe calls and cancels, what are you going to do? You either try to change your plans for the last week, everybody grumbles and decides to do something different, or at the very last minute, you got to change. I mean, it's a mess. So I think that's one reason. Now, comparing the two markets, the role-playing market is fairly soft. I mean, it's hard to do well in that market.
Is it declining?
Dragons and Wizards of the Coast are so gigantic and enormous,
right?
Like a juggernaut. If you're not riding their coattails, it's really hard to get much done.
All right. Do you think the role-playing market's declining, or is it still pretty big?
I think it's tapering off. It's not dead by any means or breathing its last. But one of the big differences, now when I talk Dungeons & Dragons, I'm talking about the new version, which is
3.5.
And there are rumors about a fourth edition coming out. And so while these rumors have yet to have any concrete fact behind them, they're so persistent that a lot of publishers are leery of producing content that's going to become, you know, already obsolete by the time it hits the market.
Well, let's go into board games now. Let's talk about some of your favorite board games. What's your favorite Euro game?
You know, that's really hard because I take a look at my ratings, and favorite really kind of depends on what I'm going to do at the moment.
Right.
But I'd have to say probably it would be between El Grande and maybe, like, For Sale. I think for Euro games, the ones that are the best in my mind are the ones that do what they need to do and get it wrapped up and done in about an hour or less.
Now talk about your ratings. I guess this is more American style game. You rate Cosmic Encounter a 10. Does that still hold for you?
It does, and I have to say with the caveat that that's specifically the Mayfair or Eon version, and with only certain rules in place. More than any other game, Cosmic Encounter has more house rules and player preferences than anything I've ever encountered.
Right. I have the Mayfair edition as well, for the reasons you stated in your review about the player limitations and the flares not being there, it's just no comparison, really.
I just think that if you're going to play that sort of game with that much craziness going on, play it right.
Exactly.
At the table with six people.
Exactly. Now I was looking at some of your ratings, and I found this kind of interesting on you. With respect to Sid Saxon, you rate Sleuth and Acquire a 4, but you give Can't Stop, which I agree with, Can't Stop a 9. But why do you rate those other classic Sid Saxon games so low?
You know, that was really hard for me to do, and I want to make sure people understand I have nothing against Sid Saxon.
Right, right.
Those two games just don't hit me well. And I think my other ratings bear that out. I am horrible at deduction games. Horrible. So the fact that Sleuth is a deduction game, you know, I can't remember what I had for breakfast, let alone what I asked them in the previous round.
Right. Right.
Good way.
Now here, still staying with your ratings here, War of the Ring, you give 3.5. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you traded that for El Grande. That's got to be a crime there.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they haven't reported me because I went out like a bandit.
Right. What was your problem with War of the Ring?
I think my biggest problem with War of the Ring were the expectations, because there was so much hoopla surrounding this game when it came out. I bought it as soon as it came out, cracked it open. There weren't a lot of cheat guides and resources online to go to as a first-time player, and I have to admit, despite as many games as I've played, and I feel like I got a pretty good experience to draw on, the rules completely befuddled me. The dynamic for the hunt, trying to figure out the best thing to do during each time, allocating dice, I never felt, as the Shadow or the Free People, that I ever could look at my hand, look at the board, and go, ah, here's a good move.
Right.
And that could just be that I'm really bad at it. But I also didn't want to have to know every single card in both decks to be able to use that to judge what I could do or what my opponent may have, what he may not have. I just figured it was too much like homework, and there was a reason I'm not still in college.
Right. That just surprised me because you're a D&D writer, War of the Ring. Why you rated that so low, it stuck out to me as something very interesting there on you.
It really doesn't have anything to do with the theme. I just thought all of these different things fit well for somebody who could invest four or five games to really get the feel for
yeah.
it. But I'm like, you know what? That's too much time when I've got so many other games and so many other things to spend my time with.
Right. I agree with you, though, that the rule book on that was not the best.
Like, if I had picked it up today and hadn't had the bad taste in my mouth already, if I had never played it, got it today, and I was able to download some of the really good cheat sheets and some of the really good player guides online,
yeah,
I may have had a completely different experience.
So you got it early then?
Yeah.
Early on. Okay, let's another one game I want to talk to you about is Samurai. In your review of Samurai by Reiner, you call it the perfect game.
Yep.
Is that still holding for you?
Yes, but it's also like being able to appreciate fine art without liking the art itself. I love Claude Monet's water lilies and paintings for their artistic style and the significance for that time period. Me, I don't want that hanging on my wall.
Right.
In a way, I kind of feel that way about Samurai. I think it's elegant, crisp, clean, beautiful. I love the way it looks. I love the simplicity of the rules. I love the concept. I love how it feels, the tactile sensation. But I find myself, somebody will recommend it, I'm like, I'm happy at being perfect on the shelf right now.
What, you know, the where I would disagree with you on Samurai would be the components. I definitely agree they're great. The gameplay is great, but the game winning conditions are kind of quirky, and I think that
quirky, yeah,
and I think that kind of keeps it from being the perfect game. I can't agree with you there just because of that. It seems like the winning conditions should be more straightforward for it to be.
I can definitely see that, and you know, this is one of those things where I made a snap judgment, did a little bit of comparison to back it up enough that I felt good with it. It hasn't changed in about the last year, and I think it's only because I haven't found something that, in my mind, knocked it off that pedestal.
What are you playing recently now? What's on your table now that you're playing board games?
You know, it changes a lot because I just had surgery. I've got a new baby. Say right now, Blood Bowl, one of my all-time favorite games. I'm actually back in the league. Love it. I'm a big fan of, I've been playing a lot of Can't Stop online because it's quick. You can get in, get out.
Right.
And right now I probably go with Blood Bowl and follow that up with just some classic games, Cribbage. I always have time to play Cribbage with somebody.
Right. Are you a deadly player at Cribbage?
I can pretty much commit suicide in Cribbage about faster than anybody else.
No, what I meant are...
Always goes for the long shot.
Are you unbeatable?
No, I'm good. But I'm not cocky good.
So. I love Cribbage myself, but I think I'd be scared to play you if you're that good.
And I'd just be good in my own mind.
Now, you mentioned Blood Bowl, playing that in a league. Have you ever played Formula Day in a league?
I did, and Formula Day is another game that if a league started up that my schedule fit, I would be all over that. I love Formula Day, and my preference is where everybody has two cars. So that you can be ultra aggressive, and if one of them gets smoked, you're not out of the game yet.
How do you?
It's worse than crashing in the first curve and then being, you know, an observer for an hour.
All right. How do you play the? What rules do you use? You use all of them? Any? What format do you use when you play that?
The only optional rule that we haven't played with are the tires, because that's just like why bother? But
right.
We play with the weather conditions, and we play with the slow start or rolling start. And we actually keep track of the standings and points. And rather than actually running little timing laps for position, we just seed them in reverse points order. So who's ever last in the standings gets to go first and has the pole for the next race.
Do you? I was looking at some of the league rules online with that, and they have some very funny ones, like where they issue sanctions. Do you ever play with those?
No, I think part of it is because for a lot of these people. We don't see each other or do much offline from the game table. So all the smack talking, anything like that we do, pretty much is limited to things that would have the greatest impact when we're there.
Right.
For some games, sanctioning or other little hand slapping, if you're not able to make fun of them in between sessions, it's not as much fun.
Now, do you have all the expansion tracks for that?
I've got about six or seven of them. Not all of them by any means, but when we were heavy in the league, I bought them up when I could. But they're hard to come across now, and without
yeah.
a week to
Yeah, I was disappointed. You know, they reprinted Formula Day, but they didn't do the tracks. I was hoping they'd get the tracks so I could fill in my gaps as well on that.
But, and that's the problem is I've got Formula Day in enough tracks, and since they're double-sided, you can flip it over and play on the other side. You know, it's hard to justify getting more tracks for a game that doesn't see as much play as it should.
Right. Well, let's talk about American-style games. Now, I noticed you sent me an email. You said the original Fury of Dracula, along the lines of Robert Martin online there. You agree with him that that's your favorite version of that game. Why is that for you?
You know, part of it may be nostalgia, I'll admit, because I've got a special place in my heart for a lot of those old-school Games Workshop games.
Right, right.
I think the components worked really well and were visually stunning, especially for their time. Now, yes, the art today on the new FFG version, hey, it looks great. But does it look that much better than the other version? I also think that as four players, it created a really tight, tense drama with Dracula bouncing around and trying to track him down. It almost feels like they tried to soften the game with the Fantasy Flight rules to make it a little bit easier, to make it a little bit more fair. And
right.
For that sort of game, the imbalance and the unpredictability really felt right.
Right.
And for some of the best games that we played, oh gosh, we talk about them for months later going, oh, when you doubled back and you went back in the water and we were running around chasing our tails, I thought for sure we had you cornered. And I just didn't get that sense with the new one.
Right. Do you have Dungeon Quest?
Oh, absolutely. With the Catacombs expansion.
With the Catacombs expansion. Now, does that improve the game in your mind or no?
Well, I do think it improves the game, but again, you have to understand that the whole idea behind Dungeon Quest is not to survive, it's to find out either how long you can go before you die or to die in the most interesting way.
Right.
So in that regard, you know, Catacombs is great. It gives you a whole bunch of new ways to die.
I was so happy to get a copy of Dungeon Quest, a very good copy from England. I got it, And I tend to agree with Robert Martin on this, that it's one of the best dungeon crawls out there. Would you agree, or do you compare that with Descent?
It's really on the up. I've only watched agonizing sessions of Descent. Thankfully, I haven't sat in one yet. Well, I've seen an eight-hour game of Descent going on.
Oh, really? Really?
And that was just the starter scenario.
Yeah, you should be okay with that, Jason. I mean, you play role-playing, which eats time like anything, right?
Well, it does, but I think, you know, in Descent, they only got through four rooms. You know, if I'm going to spend that much time, I'm going to kill me some orcs and move on.
Right.
I really like Dungeon Quest. I think it's a great game. I don't know if I'd put it in the same league as some others because it's not cooperative. It's a little bit more competitive, and that's one thing I do enjoy about dungeon crawls. I think if I had to pick Warhammer Quest, which I guess is the descendant of Advanced Hero Quest, which is the descendant of Hero Quest, that is my favorite dungeon crawl game.
Do you have Hero Quest as well?
I have two copies of Advanced Hero Quest, but I don't have the original Milton Bradley branded Hero Quest.
That's too simple for you, huh?
Yeah, especially once you get the depth of everything else out there.
Right. So any other dungeon crawls out there that you like?
Well, we had mentioned briefly Mage Knight Dungeons, which I really liked because with the clicky bases, it was able to very easily give you that concept of leveling up.
Uh-huh.
And while it wasn't necessarily cooperative, it had more of a competitive you against your opponents than Dungeon Quest is, which is more you against the game engine.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to take a look around and take a look at some of these others. It may not be traditional fantasy, but I would consider Siege of the Citadel, the Mutant Chronicles Siege of the Citadel. I consider that a dungeon crawl style game. You've got your guys in there fighting monsters, grabbing loot, gaining experience, and getting the hell out for the next mission.
Right. Now, let's talk about something. I noticed on one of your gig lists is very funny. I think it was how to piss other gamers off or something like that.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that I really got a kick out of was that one of the comments you made where you open a sealed copy of a gamer's game or something and start playing it. I got a friend that's got like three sealed copies of an old game. I think it's called Hotels. You're familiar with that game?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, but he's got 3 sealed copies of that. It's not really worth that much, but he's just collecting it. And I thought that was funny. Are you a collector yourself?
I am. I'm not obsessive about, well, okay, I've got 620 some games. I guess I'm obsessive. but I collect games primarily that I think I would enjoy playing. Unfortunately, a lot of them are still sitting in their shrink wrap, but that's just because of the time involvement. It's not for lack of will.
Right. Tell me about this Geek Way to the West.
Well, the Geek Way to the West came out of actually a challenge by a chatty boy on Board Game Geek. A few years ago, I was complaining that there wasn't a lot of gaming going on in St. Louis. He said, well, make a convention. Like, yeah, right, what are you going to do that? Have it in a few weeks. And then I started to think about it. I'm like, you know what? That's not a bad idea. So the first Geek Way to the West came together in about 3.5 weeks. And we had, 30-some people, which isn't that much, except they were all crammed in my house.
Ah, okay.
So last year we ended up getting a new facility and more than doubling the number of attendees. And a few friends and local geeks, we got together and said, you know what? This is actually pretty fun, and we've gotten a lot of response. Let's go a little bit bigger. So this year, we pulled out not all the stops, but a lot more of them, and actually rented a nearby community center. And we sent out a bunch of invites to people, and we've already got responses from people in more than 10 states that are going to come to St. Louis and join us for some gaming.
Ah, this is great. So what style is played there? Is it everything goes, or...
It's pretty much going to be a little bit of everything. I know that a lot of people, based on just the number of board game geeks here in St. Louis, are probably tilted a little bit more toward the Euro side, but I'm also trying to go to some of the local board game groups and meetups and say, hey, you know what? I see that you've got a Go league. Come and play Go. And if that's all you do all weekend, just play it and teach some new people how to play.
Right.
I'm trying to get our Blood Bowl league to play for that weekend and just do that at the convention center. So there's going to be a mix of this, that, and the other thing, but I think it's probably going to be maybe 40% Euro, maybe 30% American, depending on what you want to call that. I'm sure we're going to see Railroad Tycoon. I'm sure we're going to see Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition. And then the rest is going to be a hodgepodge. We're going to have casual board gamers, card gamers. I'm going to try to get some nice big wooden games like Tumbling Dice, set up Pitch Car, have some Crokinole board set up.
Well, so this is an annual thing you're doing, right?
Oh, absolutely. So this will be the 3rd year, and already based on the response, we're already making plans for the 4th year.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you started with 30 people, now you're up to...
We're looking to have about 120, 125 people this year.
Right, right. And tell me, before I let you go here, what are there any games that you're looking forward to coming out recently, that are about to come out?
You know, it's weird because fewer things that pop up on the radar interest me as much. And I don't know what that is, but I'm most interested in Talisman 4th Edition, Games Workshop game that I grew up on.
Right, right.
We wore through previous copies of it. We played it so much that we wore through all the cards. And so I'm completely stoked that I spent more money than I should have on 3rd Edition. And I'm like, okay, that's fun, but I want the new flavor. I want the new hotness. What are they going to do next? So when I found out that 4th Edition is going to come out, pretty excited about that. The other thing I'm pretty excited about is Your Move Games, who publishes Battleground,
uh-huh.
which is that miniatures game that uses a deck of cards instead of actual figures.
Right.
We've got some new game ideas coming down the pipe that applying that card game, war game philosophy, maybe to sci-fi or to historical wars. I think it's such a fabulous system that I'm really looking forward to anything else that they come out with that uses that.
Uh-huh. So you were talking about Talisman. That reminded me. Have you played Return of the Heroes?
Oh, gosh, no. That's a game that I've been desperately trying to negotiate a good trade for, but haven't been able to. But that's a game that people, that and another game, Prophecy, that people point to and say, this is really the new age Talisman.
Right. And I tend to agree with that. I have Return of the Heroes, and it really streamlined it and made it a lot of fun. I think that, and I have not heard about the Talisman 4. It seems like Talisman, the second Talisman was the big collectible one, right?
Well, the 3rd edition had a lot of the big 3D elements and a lot more of the figures that were involved in it, but the 2nd edition was the color edition, and I wouldn't be surprised if Games Workshop put more into the development of that for all the art and inking and coloring than any game that they had done up to that point that wasn't, you know, Warhammer.
Do you have the second edition?
I have a faded one copy of second edition, and I've got a third edition Talisman that's just missing the Dragon Tower expansion.
Ah, okay. What do you think of a Twilight Imperium?
Oh, you know, that's tough. I've got a soft spot in my heart for the second edition, which I thought was fabulous. And again, it's another one of those games that my group and I played so much that the cards are threadbare and the tokens are falling apart.
Right.
Third edition blew me away with the bits, the components, the size, and the grandeur. But I almost felt that they were trying to merge things a little bit too much, that it lost a little bit of the original flavor.
Uh-huh.
I still think it's a great game, but I think that they lost a little bit of what second edition had.
Right. Okay, Jason, I don't want to take up your whole evening. I really appreciate you talking with us. And
I'm glad you called.
I'm
here to talk games with anybody at any time, man.
All right, I enjoyed reading your geek list, and keep those coming on Board Game Geek. Those you have the most interesting topics, I think, of anybody on those geek lists.
Well, I appreciate that.
All right, Jason, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Good on.
All right. Thank you, Jason, for stopping by the Ultimate Podcast and the League of Untouchable American Gamers. You know, one of the things he brought up that was a very good point, the smack talk in gaming, the smack talk when you're playing Formula Day or anything, you know, and I often wonder how the Euro guys, game guys even have any fun. That's half the fun, the smack talk. Otherwise, you're just rolling dice. You know, who cares about, well, you know, having to get the adrenaline going with the smack talk and everything. And I know some people have said the smack talk on this podcast should stop, but I ain't started yet. You remember that line from, oh, one of my favorite westerns, El Dorado. Do we have that? Play that line of El Dorado with John Wayne and the character Bull in there. Play that. He's talking about smack talk. Play the, my favorite line from El Dorado here.
Watch it, the way your hand's shaking. Don't let it get near the trigger.
Now, don't you get on me, Bull.
I ain't started yet.
I ain't started yet neither. And we're going to keep the smack talk running here at the Ultimate Podcast, but in a fair way. And speaking of fairness, I want to introduce you to the newest member of the league. Like the president's cabinet, where he has some Democrats on the cabinet too, and Republicans, you know, for a good mixture of ideas, I thought I should finally bring on board to the League of Untouchable American Gamers a Eurosnoot, just to keep things balanced. And I'm going to introduce you to him now. His name is Mr. Fabulous. Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous.
Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Tell us, sir, how you're feeling tonight.
I am fabulous.
Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Tell us, sir, how you're feeling tonight.
I am fabulous.
Thank you, Steve. My most recent pursuits have entailed working on a 300-page strategy guide to the number one game, Puerto Rico. As you know, several stratagems have manifested themselves on various websites and various weblogs, but I must confess with all modesty that my strategy is undoubtedly the best. Other Puerto Rico neophytes have professed certain success with so-called corn strategy, but in doing so, they overlook the importance of indigo in one's colony. The balance of indigo to corn is absolutely essential if one wants to establish a colony with a chance for victory. Timed with the tactical play of the trader profession to throw the opponent into a state of total confusion. Such crafty play initiates a glorious first step to along a most overlooked stratagem that I detail in some length in my volume entitled Indigo, the Thin Blue Line to Success in the Game Puerto Rico.
Hey, well, why don't we just play a cool game of open a couple of cool ones and play a cool game of Liar's Dice?
Ah, how ghastly, Steve. I would much prefer a white wine spritzer with a casual game of Carcassonne, with the tower expansion, of course, because I can't stand a messy tile pile.
Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Tell us, sir, how you're feeling tonight.
I am fabulous.
Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Let's talk to Mr. Fabulous. Tell us, sir, how you're feeling tonight.
I am fabulous.
Who was that? That guy sounded familiar. Who was that guy? You know, the problem with bringing in Mr. Fabulous is he wants to redecorate the whole boardroom of the League of Untouchable American Gamers. And I don't know if we're going to let him do that or not. But anyway, I want to thank you folks for stopping by this week. And what a fun show we had. Thanks to Jason Little for stopping by. And we'll see you next time on the Ultimate Podcast.